This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of August the 5th, 2019. I'm Mason King. Indianapolis is notoriously known as a car city, as in, if you don't have a car, you're going to find it very hard to get around. Now, there's the Indigo bus system, of course, and taxis are also available, but at least historically, both of those options have had limitations. But in the last 6 years, the local transportation ecosystem has exploded with options. In 2013, the Lyft and Uber ride-sharing services entered the market. In 2014, the Indiana Pacers bike share program started. And in 2015, the Blue Indy car sharing service debuted with electric vehicles located at charging stations throughout the city. This was a fresh idea, not just for Indianapolis, but the United States. It was backed by the French logistics firm Bolloré and billionaire Vincent Bolloré. It was based on a similar program that had been rolled out to some success in Paris with 70,000 subscribers. The city of Indianapolis partnered with Blue Indy, contributing $6 million, while the company said it was investing $40 million of its own money to launch the service. Under the deal, Bolloré would begin profit sharing with the city once Blue Indy was profitable. The company recouped its own investment, and Indianapolis Power and Light was compensated for $3 million in work that it did to support the service. And Blue Indy made some predictions, what now seem like very aggressive predictions, about the profitability of the service and what it would look like by the year 2020. Now, in the meantime, the city has been inundated with electric scooters, and the Indigo bus service has beefed up its routes while planning major rapid transit lines, the first of which, the Red Line, debuts next month. Amid this growth in the transit ecosystem, IBJ's Haley Colombo wanted to know how far Blue Indy had gone to meeting its projections. Spoiler alert, after 4 years, it still isn't profitable, nor does it expect to be anytime soon. It's also lagging in the number of subscribers and charging stations it expected. And that's the focus of Haley's story on the front page of this week's IBJ, which also looks at how the city is getting closer to the point where at least some residents have enough options to navigate the area without needing to own a car. And apparently, after winning several major business journalism awards for her IBJ series, One City Worlds Apart, Haley has qualified for time off, but she has very graciously allowed us to call in on one of her days off. Haley, thank you so much for making time for us.
Absolutely.
I'm not calling you on like the North Rim of the Grand Canyon, am I?
Nope. I am doing a little staycation. It's very nice. And of course, still thinking about work. So yeah.
It's a disease. It's the worst.
Right?
I know. But we'll move on. Now, let's quickly talk about Blue Indy's entrance into the Indianapolis market. How did Indianapolis become the first city where Bolloré would try this in America?
So Vincent Bolloré, he told Forbes once, for me, Indianapolis is the city of a car. When I was young, I was very impressed by the races. So he knew about Indianapolis. And then he had also heard that around that time, then Mayor Greg Ballard was, you know, on a, you know, path forward towards sustainability. That was one of his big initiatives. And you'll remember, you know, the Division Fleet plan, remember, to convert the municipal fleet to electric cars. So Vincent Bolloré heard about that program. You know, those things kind of converged to Indianapolis being the place where this would happen.
And why was Ballard enamored with electric vehicles?
Greg Ballard obviously had a long career in the Marines. You know, he's in the military. He cares deeply about national security. He pretty deeply believes that reducing dependence on foreign oil is extremely important for our national security, and that a way to do that is to really invest in things like electric vehicles. So the city agreed to invest $6 million, and essentially the $6 million was sort of for the infrastructure behind this, those charging stations that stick out of the ground.
So did that money have any strings attached? Were there like requirements the Bolloré was supposed to meet, any kind of performance targets over a certain period of time?
Not as far as writers or members or anything like that, no. They're sort of left to their own to grow. The whole story is about how they made these big predictions to grow pretty fast and pretty aggressively, and those have not come to pass.
Now, there was significant resistance on the City County Council to Blue Indy, as I recall, and the Marion County Auditor actually filed a lawsuit against Blue Indy. These concerns were essentially resolved in, I think, 2016 with a franchise agreement that would net the city $45,000 a year for allowing the company to operate its stations on the city right-of-way. And there still have been complaints, or I believe there still are complaints, about how Blue Indy's curbside charging stations eat up parking spaces in some of the city's most trafficked areas. But is it fair to say that Blue Indy has operated, say, for the last 3 years or so without a lot of turbulence?
Yes. I think that's fair to say. Still, I mean, there's definitely still people who think that they shouldn't have gotten the $6 million to begin with, or that this profit sharing that they agreed to should have been formulated differently to get the city's investment back quicker. Mm.
So back in 2015, Bellore predicted that by 2020, the company would operate in the black and have at least 15,000 members, 200 stations, and 500 electric cars on the road. Where are they today?
So they are not in the black. They've been operating in the red. They haven't made money any year, okay? They have 3,000 active members, so a fifth of the 15,000 they projected. They have 92 stations as opposed to the 200 they projected, and 200 cars as opposed to the 500 cars they expected. And the number of cars, interestingly enough, the number of cars has actually gone down. They had 280 cars a couple of years ago. Now they have 200. They said that was a strategic decision to, because the cars weren't moving, because they didn't have enough members and rides, for people who were using the service, they essentially couldn't find anywhere to park because the stations just had Blue Indy cars in them that weren't being used.
Right.
So they had to take those off the road. And I think some of them have been deployed to L.A., so Bellore is also operating a similar service in L.A.
And speaking of L.A., let's bring in James Delgado, who's Managing Director for Blue Indy and Vice President of Business Development for Bellore's Blue Systems. And we spoke to him earlier about Blue Indy's results so far, and we called him in L.A., where Bellore in 2017 launched a very similar Blue L.A. program. And here's our conversation. James, thanks so much for joining us from Los Angeles.
No problem, Mason. My pleasure.
So when Blue Indy launched in 2015, company officials predicted that by 2020, the company would be profitable and have at least 15,000 members, 200 stations, and 500 electric cars on the road. Today, you're at about 3,000 active members, 92 stations, and about 200 cars. But how close do you think you're going to get to those original projections by the end of 2020?
Sure. Those numbers, you know, if a project like this had not been rolled out or tried, certainly in North America. However, in Europe, it had been rolled out to some success, and the numbers in Europe were just, I mean, completely astronomical compared to here. And that's, you know, obviously due to Europeans being a lot more used to shared mobility, mass transit, et cetera. And so I think those numbers were maybe pie in the sky numbers, what is accomplishable here at the time. And I think that I think eventually those numbers are accomplishable. I think it's going to take some time to get there. I think it was we were optimistic to think that within a couple of years we could achieve that number of members based on the current climate, not only in Indianapolis but in the U.S. around car ownership. So we knew it was going to take some time to really change the culture of car ownership. What we didn't know is how long it would take. So today, we have 92 stations and 200 cars. We actually had 300 cars. And we made a strategic decision this past year to take some of those cars off the road because what we were finding was that a lot of our stations were full, meaning there were five cars there. And a lot of people were not taking rides because they couldn't get a parking spot at a Blue Indy station. And so strategically, that has actually worked out for us. And we've actually, since we took 100 cars off the road, we've actually seen our rides increase as people see more open spaces where they can take a Blue Indy car and park at another station. So, you know, we certainly can add cars back to our fleet as we continue to grow. I think we are a little bit ambitious in terms of the uptake that we expected in the first couple of years. And we've just adjusted a little bit to meet the needs of the market and the potential of the market.
So will you be profitable in 2020?
A great question. And I think, you know, I'll give you a similar answer in respect to that was our goal. We were pretty optimistic that if we achieved X number of members, again, based on historical experience in Europe, that we could achieve a certain amount of revenue. And what we wound up finding is that it's going to take longer here to change the culture of car ownership, to change the way people get around, in particular in Indianapolis. We like our cars in Indianapolis. There's a limited number of mobility operators. There's a limited amount of public transportation options that currently exist in Indianapolis. And until we change that, then we're going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to increase memberships and number of rides. But profitability is going to be a few years away. And, you know, when you look at mobility operators around the country, whether it be the TNCs, the ride-hailing companies, Uber and Lyft, who are losing millions and millions of dollars every single month. You look at public transportation companies that are heavily subsidized by either federal government or state government grants, et cetera. The mobility industry is a tough industry to make money at, and it really is a long-term project to offer members the different services they want, the locations they want, the use cases they want. And so, you know, the short answer is no, we don't expect to be profitable in 2020. The long answer is we do expect at some point to be profitable, but it's going to take some time, like I said, to get enough people changing their mindset about mobility. Mm-hmm. To reach the type of revenue numbers that we need to see.
I mean, obviously some people locally are sensitive about the profitability because there was a profit sharing agreement with the city.
Yep.
I think that invested $6 million. Do you have a sense of when you might be able to start the profit sharing with the city?
No, I really can't speak to when. I mean, we are sensitive to the partnership that we put together with the city, and we appreciate the partnership and the support that we got from the city. I think what it's really going to take is an investment and a continued investment from the city, not financially, but in terms of infrastructure, in terms of policy, in terms of different programs that are going to provide citizens of Indianapolis with incentives to use public transportation, shared use mobility, et cetera. And I think that you know, while we're not looking for more financial investment from the city, what we are looking for is really more support, grassroots type of encouragement to leave your car at home, to reduce your household from 3 cars to 2 cars, from 2 cars to 1 car. And it's going to take some effort, not just from Indianapolis, but also from surrounding communities and, you know, like Carmel and Zionsville and Greenwood, and making transportation into the city easier to do without owning a car.
All right. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is sponsored by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
All right, we're back with the IBJ podcast and my conversation with James Delgado, Managing Director for Blue Indy. So we're not profitable for 4 years. I think people naturally fear that you're just eventually going to leave. How long are you committed to staying in the market, even if you're not profitable?
Well, I think it's a long-term plan. Our parent company, the Bolloré Group, is a it's a global energy company and logistics company, and the car sharing, electric car sharing, is one piece of it. And we understand that that it's going to take a while to see electric car sharing become profitable, whether that's in Indianapolis or whether that's in Los Angeles, et cetera. You know, so we're committed for the long run. We're fortunate to have a company and ownership that are committed to providing alternative forms of mobility and energy solutions that are environmentally friendly, reduce pollution, provide equitable mobility to people in cities, not just in the U.S., but across the globe. We have operations that are growing at a phenomenal rate in Europe and Asia, and we truly believe that the U.S. Is ripe with opportunity to grow electric car sharing. We're just, I think, a little bit behind the Europes and the Asias in terms of bringing more electric cars to market.
So no plans to leave the Indianapolis market?
No. Absolutely not.
What have you found is the biggest challenge for signing up members? How do you move the needle on that part of it?
So, you know, we've had a lot of success in signing up members. Really that demographic, that 18 to 35-year-old is really our demographic that we've had the most success with. I think that the part of the challenge is just a continued education. And then the biggest opportunity I think we have is really tapping into the business community. There's a lot of tech companies that have either come to Indianapolis or are coming to Indianapolis. When you look at Salesforce and you look at Cummins and Lilly, the big employers, you have Infosys coming to Indianapolis. All of these employers are employing young people that are looking to live in a thriving community, you know, where there's good options for food and entertainment, et cetera. And that's really our bread and butter. Those are our demographics that we're going after. And so I think what you'll see from Blue Indy is really a lot more outreach in the rest of this year and going forward to companies to see how we work together with companies to provide their employees with not just the knowledge about Blue Indy, but maybe incentives. Rather than offering parking discounts or free parking, why not offer them a Blue Indy membership? Why not offer them a Pacers Bike Share membership, a discounted bus fare with Indigo? And so I think that those are huge opportunities for not just Blue Indy, but for the other mobility providers in Indianapolis to help kind of change the culture of mobility.
Is 15,000 members still the magic number?
No, I don't think. I think that, you know, that number is a simplistic way to look at of memberships types, you know, multiplied times the average number of trips that they take, et cetera. But I think that the more that we look at the business, the more that we understand the things that members want to see in terms of innovation and upgraded technology with our vehicles, members want to see different rate plans for short term versus what will it cost me if I want to keep it for 2 hours, et cetera. And so I think that there are some changes that we can make, and we'll see some new rate plans coming out later this year that are going to attract members that we don't see today. We're going to attract members that want to use the car for 2 hours or 3 hours. And I think that's going to help. So it's not necessarily just about the number of memberships. It's about different use cases where people can use the car short term or even long term, up to, you know, 2 to 4 hours.
And there have been some nice signs of progress. I think there was a 12% increase in rentals from 2017 to 2018, from about, I think, 46,000 rides to 51,600. So far this year, rentals are at about 27,000, and that's on track to beat 2018.
We're really excited about the numbers this year. And, you know, 15%, would we like to see it in the, you know, 20, 25%? Sure. We look at that 15%, and what people don't understand when you look at that number 15% is that in reality, it probably would have been a lot higher right now had the red line construction not been going on. You know, during the red line construction, we've had up to 7 stations, popular blue indie stations, closed for 6 months, for almost half the year, because of the red line construction. And so when you take into account that we've had a large number of stations that are closed where members have not been able to use those stations, really our probably growth would be somewhere in the 20s right now, which is really, really encouraging. And so we see that as an encouraging sign. The other thing that we look at are the other mobility players that are coming to market and their activities. The scooters, Indigo. We think Indigo, and by the way, Indigo is a great partner for Blue Indy. We work closely with them, again, really to try to change the culture of mobility in Indianapolis, and they're doing some really great stuff. But we see, for example, scooters. We see a lot of scooters scattered around our stations, whether it be in the morning or the afternoons. And so what we are realizing is that people who have wanted to use Blue Indy and maybe have not in the past, they've not used it because maybe it's inconvenient, maybe it's a mile away from their house. But with the micro-mobility operators coming to town like scooters, we're seeing those scooters used for first and last mile solutions to and from our Blue Indy stations. And so I think there was some fear about scooters and the impact that they would have on Blue Indy and some other providers. And for us, it's actually been a positive experience. And I think there's a place for them in Indianapolis. And it solves that first and last mile problem that people have. Well, even that's getting to an Indigo bus station, or it's getting to a Blue Indy station. I think that because Indianapolis does not have one mass transit system like some big cities have, we have to partner together and piece together a puzzle of mobility that includes people like the Limes, the Birds, the Lyfts, the Ubers, Indigo, and Blue Indy, and Pacers Bike Share to create a mobility ecosystem that provides what members want. Is I want to be able to get to work, but I also want to be able to go out to dinner or go to an event. And so we're really optimistic about the growth that we're seeing this year, and we'll forecast continued growth next year as well.
Okay. What do you think about growth next year? Do you have any numbers?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to project. I mean, it's, you know, the first, you know, 2015 to 16, obviously you see a tremendous, increase in rides and members. You know, these last couple of years were 15, 18%. So I would expect with some of the new pricing models and some of the new innovation that we're coming out with, I wouldn't expect to see certainly not a decrease. I think with the addition of the Indigo Red Line and the work that they continue to do in promoting shared use mobility, I think we'll continue to see success. And, you know, I would predict a similar type of growth year next year as well.
So, Haley, what is the city's take on how Blue Indy is performing so far, or is there a take?
The city is not necessarily expecting to get paid back, is what my impression was from talking to folks. I talked to Zach Adamson, who is the vice president of the City County Council. He is he was a big critic of the program. I think his take is like, look, like for people who are using Blue Indy, you know, I'm glad that there's a service, but he doesn't think enough people are using it. Doesn't think the ends, you know, justify the means type things. For his take, he's like, we're probably never going to see money from this.
What happened in Paris with Blore's first electric car service?
So Paris was the big example of, look how successful we are in Paris. You know, we could do a similar thing here. It was very much touted as, you know, let's make, you know, in the Paris of the Midwest.
it's the city of lights.
So that service actually shut down in 2018. They wanted Paris to, like, the city to kick in more money to, you know, essentially help mitigate some of the losses there. And Paris essentially was just like, no. But they have, as I think we mentioned before, they have launched in L.A. And, you know, that's a denser city. It seems like, you know, I don't know that they will have as many issues there.
That's interesting. I recently got back from a short vacation in Los Angeles, and the thing that struck me the most about the city, which I'd never been to before, was how incredibly dense it is.
Yeah.
Everything is backed up against everything else, and there are people everywhere. So it would not surprise me if something like that, you know, wouldn't have at least a shot.
Right. It's also, L.A. is sort of a driving city.
Well, speaking of vacation, we've taken up enough of your time. we'll let you get back to it.
Yeah, no problem.
My thanks again to Haley and James. And a quick addendum to Bolloré's fate in Paris. The city of Paris and other local governments canceled their contract for the service in 2018 after the company predicted losses of $348 million over the following 5 years and asked for taxpayers to pick up much of the cost. You can read Haley's full story at IBJ.com or in the copy of the paper you have delivered to your home or office. And before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to draw your attention to a couple more of our featured stories. Mickey Shuey reports that Indy Parks is grappling with the future of its 13 public golf courses as interest in the sport wanes and the need for maintenance and upgrades increases. Two courses are slated to close, and two others have been recommended for closure in an Indy Park study. Also in this week's paper, Susan Orr catches up with Chef Jonathan Brooks after the first anniversary of his Near East Side restaurant, Beholder. Brooks, of course, made a name for himself in the national culinary scene with Milktooth, and expectations were high for Beholder, but business has been slow to build since its debut. Again, you can find these stories at IBJ.com, and if you want full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning content, just hit the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.